Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we bring you the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduring mountain biking. Before we get into the episode, it's time for a quick thank you to my supporting partners who help keep the podcast going as well as bringing you great offers. First up, it's Komoot, a new route planning and navigation app that have got a free gift for you all. Komoot is actually designed to work for mountain biking, so it doesn't force the auto routing onto roads like some of the software available. You can use it to plan routes either in the app or on your computer. Just give it a start and an endpoint and Komoot will plan the best route for you. There's also community generated highlights like good viewpoints, great coffee shops, that kind of thing, and you can easily add these into your routes. You can then share them with your mates so that everyone knows where they're going. And it's compatible with devices like Wahoo and Garmin, so it's super easy to transfer your routes onto those too. The app itself is free to download, and you can also use it via their website, komoot.com. Normally, if you want to take the maps offline, then you'd need to buy a map bundle. But as a Downtime listener, Komoot are offering you a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. All you need to do is to head to komoot.com/G. That's Komoot, spelled K-O-M-O-O-T. .com/G and use the code downtime, all one word, all uppercase. That offer's valid until the end of August 2019, so head over to komoot.com and give it a try for free. Next up, it's Precision Hydration, who want to help us all understand our own individual hydration needs, as getting it right is super important for racing, riding, and life in general, and it's really not as straightforward as I thought. Not only does everyone sweat at a different rate, but they also lose different amounts of sodium for each litre of fluid that they sweat. That means that hydration does not have a one-size-fits-all solution. Precision Hydration are here to help you work out how you sweat and then provide a hydration plan and simple-to-consume electrolytes that are tailored to your needs. You can visit precisionhydration.com and complete their free online questionnaire that will then give you a recommended hydration plan, or if you want to take it to the next level, you can book yourself an in-person sweat test where they measure your sodium loss really accurately without you even having to do any exercise. And based on that, they'll take you through a tailored plan. After my sweat test a couple of weeks back, my Precision Hydration products arrived, and I've got both the effervescent tablets, which have basically got no calories in, and the sachet version, which is all natural and has around 70 calories of energy per serving. Both of them taste really good, and they're not too sweet like some of the products that I tried. So far, with limited testing, I'd say that I've felt less fatigued from my training when using the products, which is really good, and I'm looking forward to continuing using them and seeing how they help longer term. If you want to find out more, you can head to precisionhydration.com and complete your own free hydration plan. If you decide you want to try using their range of electrolytes, then as a Downtime listener, you get 20% off using the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout. I also massively appreciate the support from you lot. So keep on telling your riding friends about the podcast. And if you want to represent, then you can do that by getting yourself something from our webshop, downtimepodcast.com/shop. Don't forget to head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and subscribe to the podcast, as well as joining our newsletter to keep up to date with everything podcast related. And give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. All right, this episode is also supported by Cotic, and I'm joined by their main man, Si Turner, to chat about mixed wheel size bikes. I've been riding a Cotic Flairmax for a while, which is their 29-inch shorter travel platform, and I've actually been running it in the slightly longer travel setup, which they've recently launched as the Flairmax 132. You can head to cotic.co.uk if you want to check that out. I'm relatively short at around 5'8", so I was interested in whether or not a 275 rear wheel would be beneficial for me. As it turns out, Si was experimenting with the same kind of stuff, so we thought it'd be great to get together and give it a go. In this episode, we chat about our testing, why mixed wheel size bikes are being seen at the races, what to consider if you want to give it a go on your bike, and also we catch up on some other tech trends and get Si's take on that. So, without further ado, here's Si Turner. Si Turner, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So we're going to be talking about one of the hot topics at the moment, mixed wheel size bikes. What is it that you think that's driving some of the usage of mixed wheel size bikes that we've seen in Downhill World Cup and EWS?
Obviously, the rule change, because the UCI for years and years and years had the both wheels had to be the same size rule. And it actually didn't come from mountain biking. It came from outlawing low-profile time trial bikes about 25 years ago, because they used to have like 20 inch front wheels to get the frontal area down. So they've kept it for road, not for MTB. And obviously people experiment. I think the reason why you're seeing it at World Cup is because quite a few of the top riders aren't very tall. You know, they're all like 5'6", 5'7", 5'8". And with 200 millimetres of rear wheel travel, they're just going to struggle to physically stay out of the way of a 29-inch rear wheel.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the taller guys, you know, Loris, Greg, those guys, they're running 29 front and rear because they can, it fits them. And on EWS, I think the only exponent that we've seen that's been talked about a lot is Martin Mize. Mm-hmm. My feeling is there is that that is just a sponsor situation thing.
Okay.
In that they don't make a big travel enduro 29er because he's like over 6 foot tall. So he'd easily fit one. Mm-hmm. It's just they don't make one. Their enduro bike is 275. So now he's got free rein. He's fitted a 29-inch wheel to the front of that bike to get some of that advantage. And, you know, and I guess, well, from what some of the testing we did, we think we know why he's done that.
Cool. Yeah, well, we'll talk about that a bit more in some detail later on. Before we get into that, talk us a little bit through kind of your process for assessing new technology or new trends, because the bike industry is pretty good at creating, you know, either new standards or you know, throwing new technology at us. What, as a bike company owner, how do you deal with that and how do you work through it?
So to start with, you have to be open and you have to be, I feel you have to be open because I used to not be, and it nearly put us out of business. Because I remember turning up at Eurobike in 2013 and suddenly 27.5-inch wheels was a thing. And we'd been looking at it, like we had a prototype on the drawing board, but nothing was kind of fully committed. And yet suddenly I was like, I felt like I'd been mugged. I was just there going, oh, so we're not doing 26 anymore, are we? And I'd partly resisted it because I was being a bit grumpy, you know, just how everyone gets, you know, you see it on the forums, you see it when you're chatting to your mates. Oh, no, not another bloody standard. Yeah. Why do we need another bloody standard? But after that, when we actually got the bikes, despite the fact that I feel that it was something, particularly with 275, it wasn't something that was one of the few instances where the big brands did fairly cynically foist something on the industry. Mm-hmm. The top and bottom of it is, even if it's only by a handful of percent, the 275 bike was better than the 26-inch bike.
Right.
Simply.
Yeah.
So it's not like they were trying to sell you snake oil, but by the same token, it wasn't as big a step as like 26 to 29 or even 275 to 29. I felt like 26 and 29 could have lived cohabited quite happily without 275 getting in the way in the first place.
Right.
So, but that forced me to get a little bit deeper into the industry, get a few more contacts so I see some of the stuff, so I see some of the things from the OEs a lot earlier now. So things are, you know, so I get a little bit more of a view. So things like, you know, I start seeing, you know, forks for some new width or wheel size, and I'm going, okay, why is that turned up? So, you know, it's a bit something. But by the same token, just having a more positive outlook on life and being excited about new things, whilst you have to apply a healthy degree of rigor, I don't necessarily think you need to apply a healthy degree of, or even an unhealthy degree of, cynicism.
Okay.
So, and I went from just dismissing things because they were new or different to actually saying, well, I'm just going to try this. It might be brilliant. And sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't. But at least I'm speaking from a position of personal knowledge, and that's the important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're actively trying to get out there and experience all the opportunities, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. So obviously, start of this season, I don't think anyone expected to see Martin Mays on a mixed wheel size bike. I think few people knew the Specialized thing was coming.
Yeah.
But we've seen that out there. We've seen it in the enduro side of things. So obviously it piques your interest. What kind of initial work did you do to start looking at it?
To be honest, it just sort of forced my hand onto something that had been sitting in the back of my mind for a while, because obviously I don't compete and the vast majority of my riders don't my customers don't compete. So mixed wheel size is neither here nor there. And to be quite honest, I think if you turned up at a PMBA with a mixed wheel size bike, they're not going to stop you riding it.
No.
You know, it's like, you know, it's only UCI sanctioned events where it's genuinely an issue, or was. I just had this idea because I've been riding, I like 29 inch wheels on my full sus bike. But I don't get on with plus wheels on my full sus bike very well, because I've never managed to find that balance between the wheel folding, you know, the tire folding because of its size, mm-hmm. and, you know, and the grip benefits. I always ended up having to pump them up a bit hard or just go for a super heavy casing, which meant like they were really dull. Whereas on my hardtail, I do run plus wheels, because on a hardtail, you can't generate as much grip as a full sus bike. And obviously you don't have the rear suspension and you have less front suspension. So there's just much less going on and much less fighting them. And in which case, they're an absolute hoot. So in certain applications, I really like them. And then you look at motocross bikes with the small rim, fat rear, big rim, directional front tire. And obviously there's a whole different thing in terms of weight and traction and power. But it just began to make me think, you know what, I really ought to just bosh a plus rear wheel into my full sus bike, just to see whether it's a thing. And it'd just been rolling around. And then just earlier this year, when all this came out, I just thought, actually, I probably really ought to try this.
And what did you find?
My initial impression was that I hated it.
Go on.
But that was only because I did initially go for a full, like, 2.8 plus wheel, and it was the big tough casing WTB Vigilante, which is a savage of a tire, but it does also weigh quite a lot and it's quite draggy. And mm-hmm. we did go on a relatively inappropriate ride for, not inappropriate for that tire, but it wasn't great for that tire. It wasn't flat out and fast. It was quite a lot of like techie trialsy kind of moves, and the fact it had dropped the BB a bit meant it was a bit of a pain for what I was doing that particular evening. And I was like, well, you know, so I just sort of put it on the back burner a little bit after that.
So what does it do to the geometry of the bike? Talk us through that briefly.
Okay, so 274, it depends on the tire brand, and this is this is where it all gets a bit murky. But broadly, up until this year, 2.8 inch so-called plus tires, 27.5 by 2.8 plus tires, had a rolling radius about 5 millimeters less than a 29 inch wheel.
Okay.
So up until this year, broadly the difference would have been not a lot. You know, maybe a couple of tenths of a degree on the angles, couple of mil on the, you know, you'd not so you'd notice.
Right.
This year, plus has become a little bit muddy. It's almost like they're not calling 2.8 inch tires plus tires anymore, because suddenly 27.5 inch, dedicated 27.5 inch bikes that have come out in the last year, not ours, I might add, we can only go up to 2.6, but some bikes are now saying they can do 27.5 by 2.8 in their 27.5 inch bike. And I was like, really? That seems a bit odd. And then we got one of the latest batch of 27.5 inch by 2.8 tires, of which one of these Vigilantes is one. And it is a lot less tall. Like last year, we were using the WTB Rangers, which are typical big balloony plus tires. And these ones are much more like a big conventional tire. I mean, if you stick the Vigilante next 2.8 next to the 2.6 Trail Boss, that it's a very similar size and case. So suddenly you're into a rolling radius difference of maybe 8 or 10 millimeters.
Okay.
And that does start affecting the angles. And one of the other things that we ran into with this, particularly with my bike, is because it's a Rocket Max, the static head angle is 63.5. And having gone through the development process of going slacker than that and finding it was too much or not to my liking, and then coming back until I found the sweet spot, that rear wheel dropped the angles back into the 60, probably the early 62s, late 62s, and dropped the BB probably 5 or 6 millimeters from an already low position. Yeah. And I run 175 cranks because I'm tall. So all of these things kind of came together that actually just throwing it in didn't really work.
Okay. And also, you're a tall rider. How tall are you?
I'm 6'3".
Okay, yeah. So maybe not the prime candidate for a mixed wheel size or a small, you know, smaller rear wheel.
No, because ultimately I fit 29-inch wheels. I've got a 29 by 2.6-inch rear tyre and I never touch, it never gets anywhere near my backside when I'm riding.
Yeah, cool. So we got chatting about some of your early tests a while back, and I am not as gifted in the height area as you and felt that maybe it could be, you know, I could be in that range where a smaller rear wheel might give me some benefits.
Yeah.
And I'm on the Flare Max, which geometry wise is a little less extreme than
the
Rocket Max.
It's more of an all rounder. So the head angle's in the 65s.
Yeah. So we talked about, well, maybe we should give this a go and put me on a 275 rear wheel and see what it does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in between those times, like as a result of our chat about, like it may be being better for some of the smaller bikes, I thought, well, actually, maybe if that's the case, I need to actually get to a point where at least I have a setup and a vaguely positive view on this. So I went back around the loop, but went for the 2.6-inch tyre. But then I adjusted my bike using some offset bushings.
Okay.
To bring the dynamic geometry back to roughly where it would be with 29-inch wheels. Mm-hmm. And I rode that for a couple of weeks, doing a bit of everything, you know, and, you know, some steep techie stuff, just general Peak District riding, that kind of thing. And to be quite honest, once the geometry of the bike was back to what I normally experience, I didn't really notice the difference. It didn't feel like I had a particularly small rear wheel on it, but then I didn't, because the 2.6 WTB tyre is really quite voluminous.
Right.
So it felt like it had that kind of soft edge to it. I noticed the gear down, even though it was only like, you know, sort of, you know, 15 mil smaller on the radius. My low gear just felt ridiculously spinny compared to, I mean, I have a spinny gear anyway. I'm not strong. I spin. I don't wrestle. But it just felt felt like I needed to go up a chainring size.
Yeah.
That was really obvious. But I didn't feel any of the things that a lot of other people say they feel in terms of like more willingness to turn in or anything like that particularly. It just felt like my bike. And to be quite honest, I switched it back to 29 before I went to Tweedlove. And just first run down the gulf in the bike just felt brilliant. And I just thought, well, there's just nothing, there's not a lot in this going from 29 to 275 rear. There's just,
yeah,
if you can fit 29, it works.
Yeah.
So that sort of got put back in its box a little bit. But that's when I sent all the kit to you.
Yeah. Yeah, which we put on the bike. So we had kind of a weekend down in the south. So we rode Staunton on the Friday afternoon. So we did a kind of 3-hour ride there. The trails there are pretty varied, I guess. There's some quite flowy stuff, not that steep. And then there's some steeper, rougher,
yeah,
and a more interesting stuff. Yeah.
And it was pretty loose, wasn't it, in places?
Yeah, very dusty. Super dry, super loose. I guess I have to say initially, to start off with, the bike felt a little bit strange with a slightly slacker head angle because we didn't correct the geometry
at that point.
But I took a couple of PSI at the fork to kind of help account for that. And then it felt pretty good, to be honest. Mm. It felt very familiar to ride, quite similar to the 29er. And I'd say that I felt more confident in my ability to move around on the bike, having that bit more space kind of behind the saddle, I suppose, for someone of my height. So the ability to absorb compressions and...
Yeah. As a frame of reference, you keep saying someone is you haven't actually told everyone how tall you are.
That's because I'm not sure. What do you reckon, 5'7"?
Oh, I think you're probably a bit taller than that to fit on the medium as well as you do.
Okay, maybe 5'8" then.
Yeah, 5'8", 5'9". But yeah, you're right. You're on the bottom end of a medium long shot Flare Max.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because I can only just fit certain 150 dropper posts in the bike. So yeah, that feels about right. And then yeah, it felt quick, and I'm not sure if that was a placebo kind of thing or what, but it felt like I was riding pretty well, and
yeah,
it felt quite intuitive and quite fast. Yeah. I wouldn't say it felt any easier to ride or easier to turn into corners.
Yeah.
But certainly, yeah, I felt like I was able to move around on the bike pretty well. And then we did a sort of shorter ride on the Sunday.
Yeah.
On some trails local to Bristol, and again felt pretty good, and was getting used to the bike and felt confident in it. Yeah. So then we did a full day at Forest of Dean where we, you know, did some proper back-to-back work. We had some timing equipment to allow us to get a bit of an idea for what it was doing. And that's when it got interesting, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. The other thing, the other slight aside there is that because it was his local and I'd let him know we were on our way down, we did bump into Mr. Porter.
We did.
Who extolled his theories regarding mixed wheel sizes, because he's a big exponent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And talked at you at a million miles an hour while we were riding up a climb, and you just like...
it was overload.
It was overload, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was so excited about the fact we were actually testing it. It was quite fun. But it was interesting because we had all that kind of buzzing around our heads while we were riding, but didn't really feel a lot of what he was talking about particularly.
No, I've heard him articulate some of his thoughts on it before. And the turning side, I've still not quite been able to get my head around the physics of that. It wasn't anything that was immediately obvious. I think just the space on the bike was really the thing. And the ability to kind of find the edge of the traction on the bike. So it was an interesting chat, but yeah, didn't kind of explain anything for me at the time, I don't think.
No.
We did some runs on a track. We rode the same track all day.
Yeah, it was bottom of Mr. Rooty, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. So sort of semi-steep in places.
Yeah.
Not mega steep. Relatively rough kind of braking zones, I guess, some roots and lumps and bits and pieces. Quite a lot of turns, some well-supported, some less well-supported.
Yeah, it was a really difficult flat turn to make, wasn't there?
Yeah. Some interesting bits.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
A couple of little sort of fly-off sort of jumps at the bottom. And it was around kind of 40 seconds in length. So I think we did three runs on the 275 bike, with a 275 rear wheel on the bike. And I felt like I was on fire, I guess, because I'm coming off the back of a couple of rides and like with maybe a sort of placebo that I was going to be way quicker on this.
Yeah.
Mixed wheel size and channeling my inner Martin Mays. and we put down some times, and the first one was a bit slow just getting into it, but trying to ride a consistent line, maybe not riding the racing line down there, not necessarily riding it as fast as possible, but riding a line that I felt I could ride all day without making mistakes and ride consistently. And then we switched over to the 29 rear wheel, which I hadn't ridden on that bike for few weeks, but immediately sort of felt pretty comfortable and put in a run, which didn't feel great. It felt kind
of you were a bit like, well, yeah, maybe first run, whatever.
Maybe we'll take some time to get into this.
Yeah.
And then looked at the timing data and it was a second faster.
Yeah, it was quite a bit faster.
It really shocked me.
Yeah.
The bike felt a lot calmer. It felt easier to slow the bike down as well, coming in some of those turns, because they were quite rough in braking, both with
really
roots and bumps, and it was really dusty and loose. Quite shocking, really, to find that was the case. I wasn't expecting it, but the 29er definitely, although it felt slower, the time showed it was quicker. So we did a few runs on that, similar story.
Yeah.
All within kind of half a second of each other and anywhere between a second and a 1.4 faster than the 275 bike. And then to try and be scientific about things, we went back to the 275 and put that back in the bike. And I had a couple of, you know, what I would say were pretty bang on runs, because getting really used to the trail and comfortable there. And again, slightly faster than the morning, but with, you know, I don't think I got anywhere near the...
You got in the same second. You got into the
37s, I think I was 0.8 away from my faster runs.
Yeah.
But there was very clear grouping in the 275 runs and the 29, which totally shocked me.
Yeah.
So I guess from that, we set on that trail, I mean, it wasn't super dynamic. I wasn't having to move, you know, soak up big compressions or anything like that.
No. But by the same token, it also wasn't crazy bumpy where you'd expect the 29er to amplify its, you know, it was braking bumpy, but it wasn't like what you would consider a really rough track.
No,
was
it wasn't. It definitely wasn't a super rough track
in
the grand scheme of things. But it it feels like on the based on that, on the majority of trails that get ridden that I ride on, certainly, I'm going to be faster on the 29er.
Yeah.
And I think the 275 rear wheel, it probably did feel a little more lively, if that's the right word. I felt a bit more confident, I guess, to move around on over the back end of the bike and throw it around a bit more.
But liveliness was due to the dynamics of the wheel, not the weight, because it wasn't actually a lighter wheel, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Should we check that? Because you're running a carbon rim on your 29er, and Hunt sent us a rear wheel so that we had a spare one to test.
Yeah. And we had the heavier cassette in as well.
We had the heavier cassette in because it was a Shimano cassette hub with the SRAM cassette on it. So yeah, it wasn't lively because it was lighter.
No, not at all. Yeah, I think it was just kind of a more playful, is maybe not the right word, but a more lively feel to the bike. So I think for me that it would come down to, do you want to go fast and be kind of safe and comfortable, or do you want something that feels a little bit more kind of pointy and a bit more lively?
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, even my feedback was even less clear cut than that.
You put the 275 wheel in while I was on the 29.
Yeah. It just still felt like my bike. So I guess the only difference really would have been the timings, to be quite honest.
Yeah, which we didn't. We didn't which time
we
your
we
runs
didn't
that
time
day.
My runs.
Yeah.
We didn't have another set of timing kit. So, and that sort of backs up my previous work where I'd spent a couple of weeks on it. It just didn't feel like a mega difference. And I didn't really pick up on that liveliness either. I didn't feel any more or less held back by my 29-inch wheel in terms of moving it around in difficult terrain.
Which makes sense given your height.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as a result of that, I mean, we've only done one side of the experiment. So we've done 29er front and rear and dropped the rear wheel size. Yeah. What we hadn't done was 275 bike and increased the front wheel size.
Yeah.
So you went away and spent some time playing about with that. So tell us what you've been up to in the last week or so.
Yeah. So this is a much more problematic direction to go, starting with a 27.5 inch wheel bike and going to a 29 inch front wheel, because if you think about it, not only are 29 inch wheel forks on average 20 mil longer for a given stroke.
Yeah.
So for instance, so the work I did was based on our Rocket, which is our 27.5 inch enduro bike, and that was running 160 mil forks, but the same static length fork in 29 inch wheel is only 140 mil of travel.
Right.
And even that just leaves you with the axle at exactly the same point. And then you put a 29er front wheel on it, and the difference in radius is, you know, give or take 17 millimeters. So suddenly you've just jacked the front end up 17 millimeters. So which means you've lifted the BB probably the best part of 12 millimeters. You've laid the angles back probably easily a degree, if not more. So you've really changed the shape of the bike. And even that only tells half the story, because once you actually get to the dynamic geometry, so you set the rear axle where it is at sag, rider on board, and then you apply the same to the forks. Obviously, the shorter travel fork, you know, the shorter travel 29er fork doesn't sag as far as the 160 fork. So again, it's jacking the front end up again. So the dynamic, even like for like, in terms of static length, the dynamic geometry is wildly different. So what I wanted to do to give, I guess to give 275 its best chance, if you like, and also not to completely ruin the handling of the bike either, because the again, the Rocket is pretty extreme in terms of, you know, the head angle's 64.5 static with a 160 fork. So
okay.
It's, you know, you get, you start getting much slacker than that. It does start getting a bit weird, in my opinion. So what I ended up with doing is going around the loop of the dynamic geometry until I found a 29er fork and front wheel combo, which gave me a dynamic geometry as close as possible to the once to the regular Rocket with 160 mil forks. Mm-hmm. And that ended up being a 120 millimeter travel 29er fork. So it was, so statically it was 20 mil shorter than the 27.5 inch fork, which, yeah, which kind of all, which pretty much accounts for the wheel size and a bit more.
Yep.
So the static angles stay roughly the same. And then because it sags slightly less, you still get a little difference. I ended up with about, the closest I could get it was about half a degree. It was about half a degree slacker on dynamic geometry with the 29er front wheel.
Okay.
And the BB was 3 mil higher. So it was close.
Yeah.
Now, another big difference in feel at that point is despite the fact you've got the static geometry, the dynamic geometry almost the same, because of the bigger wheel, you get more trail, which is the thing that gives you the steering feel.
Yeah.
So it will be inherently more stable. You'd have to get a steeper head angle, a steeper dynamic head angle to even out the trail or go for a bigger offset and all of this kind of stuff.
There's, right.
It was as close as it felt, yeah, it was as close as I could practically get it, I yeah. felt. Certainly within the bounds of just bolting a different front end off one of the other demo bikes anyway. So yesterday I went up to the track that we use for our suspension setup, which is a Bridleway just above our base in Carver in the Peak District. It's on our demo loop. I'd managed to forget the proper timing piece of kit, which was the whole point of the doing it, but we are where we are. There is a Strava segment though. So I thought nothing, but now Strava is not, don't hang anything on Strava in terms of accuracy.
Yeah, it's not perfect.
Not perfect. But what it does, because I've ridden it about 1,000 times and I've been testing, what I have is like about 5 years worth of Strava runs down this track. So I know, you know, I know what Strava says I should be doing on this, on various bikes.
Yeah, okay. So you've got plenty of
data. So I've got plenty of data. So it was as close as I could do it. So I went into the run and tried to even out the variables in terms of starting at the same place every time, more than one run on both wheel sizes, same number of pedal strokes in the same gear off the line, freewheeled all the rest of it. Now, this is a fast, rocky track, which rewards commitment with some quite difficult to get turns at the bottom. They're good if you hit them right, they've got support, but it gets hectic.
Yeah.
So whilst I'm not going to say it's X number of seconds or things like that, I'm just not confident enough in Strava's accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
But the grouping of the data showed that there was some, even in the best case, there's probably, you know, a 7 or 8% step in speed going to the 29 inch front wheel, and that's with a 120 mil front fork rather than a 164 on a front on a. It was just faster.
Yeah. How did it feel?
It just felt like it felt like the front end of the bike was more with me.
Okay.
The bike itself felt fairly similar. It probably felt a little bit more secure in the turns, which might be to do with the, might or might not be to do with the roll axis being tilted back. It might just be the fact that it's got more trail, so mm-hmm. it is genuinely a bit more stable.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, they weren't clean runs by any stretch of the map. Both of the sets of runs had scrappy elements to them. So it wasn't like it was suddenly a magic carpet ride. And even I was surprised by the difference. It just felt, I could tell I was faster on the 29er in the turns at the bottom. It just seemed to, where I needed that feeling of security in the front of the bike to get it in, turned in over rough, over a rough section, it felt more secure doing that. So I felt like that was probably where the biggest difference was made, because I actually carried more speed into the bottom S-bends because I felt more confident in the front of the bike. Now, the full disclosure in terms of variables is I almost never ride a 275 bike. My main mode of off-road transport for the last probably 4 years has been 29-inch wheels.
Okay.
So I'm a lot more comfortable with how that feels.
Yeah.
So that slight, that hectic feel that you get on 27.5-inch wheels is definitely something I'm not used to.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that, like, as you get used to it, you would start committing to the front more.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I was running the 27.5 by 2.6 tires. So I was running big volume, low pressure, you know, sort of smoothing out style tires on the Rocket.
Yeah.
Whereas the front wheel that I used, the 29-inch front wheel I used, was a 2.5, which is, and the 29-inch versions are slightly smaller volume, and it's what I'm used to. I run a 2.5 and a 2.4 on my bike.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of felt like I gave the 27.5-inch like its best possible option.
Yeah.
And it's just wasn't as fast.
Okay, interesting. So, yeah, I guess what we've kind of shown is not a massive surprise.
No.
In that 29 is the fastest, 275 is the slowest, and a
mixture of the two is somewhere in the middle.
I guess the fact that that was measurable in any way is kind of what surprised us more than anything.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is that the mixed wheel size isn't in the middle. The mixed wheel size is definitely closer to 29 than 275 in terms of speed and capability.
Yeah. So maybe if you're a smaller rider and not totally sold on going full 29.
Yeah.
Actually, if you want to go quicker, if that's important to you.
Yeah.
Then a 29 front wheel is a good compromise.
Yeah. If you can make it work with your bike.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an interesting point then. So if people wanted to experiment with this, how would you recommend they approach it?
Well, I mean, as I've just laid out, to maintain to as closely as possible maintain the on-trail handling of the bike, I had to drop 40 millimeters out of the travel of the fork to get somewhere close.
Yeah.
And even then, it wasn't bang on. So, yeah, it's not a matter of just bolting up, you know, going, oh, I've got a 160 275 fork and 140 29er forks of the same length. I'll just bolt it on. That will make a massive difference to the geometry of your bike.
Yeah.
And that kind of rolls around, having done all this work and experienced the differences yesterday. It does put Martin Meiser's decision in a slightly more interesting light as well, because he's gone from he's bolted a 150 mil travel 29-inch fork onto a bike designed for 170 mil travel 275. So they're statically the same length. And then he's put the 29-inch wheel on it, which has jacked it up. And then when you do the dynamic geometry changes, it amplifies even more.
Because there's less sag.
So as well as the rolling speed, he's probably running a bike that's maybe 2 degrees slacker
okay
than it would be if he was running a 27.5-inch wheel bike.
Yeah.
So interestingly, not only is he, I think, potentially taking his only option to add a 29-inch wheel in some way, shape or form because his sponsors don't yet make a 29er enduro bike, mm-hmm. which is absolutely fine. You know, I'm sure when GT will eventually do one, and I'm sure he'll be very happy on it.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that those bikes are also, in my opinion, relatively conservative geometry. So what he's also managed to do at the same time is seriously radicalize his bike.
Yeah.
And yet, to all intents and purposes, he's not done anything crazy in terms of, it's not like, Burrell back in the Kona days with like sawn off and rewelded seat stays and machine bits everywhere, and the Kona guys just like with their head in their hands going, that's not a Kona anymore.
Yeah.
He's just bolted a different fork on the exact same bike the customers are buying, which is what the sponsors want.
Look
at that bike, it's like there's no offset bushings in it, there's no angle sets, there's nothing, there's no crazy bits. He's just put the bigger front wheel in because he's a big lad.
Yeah, makes sense.
So it seems quite a low PR impact way for these guys to really put some more progressive geometry onto their sponsors' bikes without upsetting anyone.
Yeah, but you suspect that once a 29er enduro bike's available, he'll be on that.
I can't see why not.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so it's not the fact that he's on a mixed wheel size bike that's making him so quick. He's very, very good at what he does.
He's very good at what he does. Yeah, let's not beat around the bush.
Yeah, and he's taken that advantage of being able to get a bigger wheel size in and kind of modify the geometry into a position where the bike's maybe a bit quicker for him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool. So what are your thoughts then for Kotick and mixed wheel size bikes? Is it something you would consider putting into the range?
I'm not sure it is at the moment because I think there's a couple of things going on. Firstly, speed isn't everything. Because, you're even admitting it yourself. Like, even though the speed difference is less marked going the way you're talking, you're seriously considering the smaller rear wheel just because it feels better.
Yeah.
And you ride for fun.
Yeah.
So for the people who want the 27.5-inch wheel experience and that liveliness and that interaction that you get from those smaller wheels... That's their primary interest.
Yeah, they're not looking for ultimate speed.
So turning the 27.5-inch wheel bikes into quasi 29ers doesn't feel to me like you're offering anything to the people who want those bikes anyway, because they want them for a different reason than that.
Yeah.
For the 29-inch wheels, again, it's if you can fit on the bike, why would you put the smaller rear wheel in?
Mm-hmm.
We have found that, and the Sam, our demo guy, is 5'7" and he rides a small Rocket Max, which is our 150mm rear travel 29er enduro bike.
Yeah,
and he has no issues. He doesn't feel like he's wanting to go to a smaller wheel and once you get over about 5'10", it becomes a non-issue in terms of moving the bike around anyway.
Yeah.
So it's really quite a small potential contingent of our customers who might be interested in it. And realistically, given what we've chatted about and given your experiences on the Flare Max, you could just put one in the back of a Flare Max if you wanted anyway. It's slightly more problematic with the Rocket Max, but because of where the head angle is. But with a Flare Max, if you wanted to do that if you're 5'4" and want to ride a small Flare Max but want a bit of space to move around, then go for your life.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to massively affect the geometry too much. So the bottom bracket was a touch lower, but I've ridden other bikes where I clipped pedals and had low bottom bracket challenges way more than I did on that.
That is the thing with the long shot bikes, that some people do find the BBs on the low side for, you know, for sort of pedaling in, like sort of seated pedaling in rough terrain kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then by the same token, the vast majority of our bikes go out with 175 cranks on them, and we now have an option for 170s. So, you know, so again, if you're a shorter rider, maybe we'll get you some 165s or something that. It's like, you know, there's, like anything with a bike, you have to look at it as a system. If you're making this decision, then you need to look at doing something else to make it all work together.
For sure. So if people were interested, they could get in touch and chat with you guys about options then.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I can see it being a spec option for people who want it rather than a dedicated bike, though.
And do you think we'll see other brands doing it, or do you think we'll see maybe some downhill bikes going that way?
Downhill, I think, is going to be... I think you're going to see bikes with the option. I suspect things like swappable dropouts or something like that, so you can change the axle height of the rear end to account for it.
Because the travel's so much longer?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're seeing it a lot on the downhill bikes, because as we've seemed to have proven here, if you can get a 29er front wheel on your bike, it is fast.
Yeah.
It's a step over 275. So... But if you're around like 5.6 to 5.8, like a lot of these fast guys are, you know, Loic, Danny Hart, you know, these guys who are running the, you know, Finn, these guys who are running the mixed wheel sizes, they just simply haven't got the leg amplitude to stay out of the way of a 29-inch rear wheel with 200 millimeters of rear travel.
Yeah, yeah.
But the interesting thing off the back of yesterday is, I was faster with 25% less travel on the front of the bike, but with a 29-inch front wheel. So potentially, would they be faster running a 160mm bike with a 29-inch wheel, you know, to keep it out of their way?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they've probably tested. Maybe they haven't. I don't know. Yeah,
you can definitely get away with less travel with a bigger wheel.
Does the rolling speed of the bigger wheel amplify the speed more than the amount of travel that you've got? And I don't know whether that's the case quite as markedly on the rear compared to the front. But I think you will see it in downhill, because particularly on smaller size downhill bikes, there just physically isn't the space for the rider and the wheel and the travel.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Well, I think we've probably covered mixed wheel size bikes pretty well. But are there other kind of trends or tech updates that are on your radar at the moment? Because like you say, you're always looking out to be aware of what's coming.
I mean, that I keep an eye on geometry, but mainly just to see what everyone else is doing in terms of moving in our direction.
Okay.
I feel like I've done the going too far and coming back, but I do keep an eye on what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Suspension trends. I've seen the high idlers that have turned up in downhill interest me, but I have no idea if they have any level of application as a trail bike. But it interests me.
Mm-hmm.
It always has done. I used to love those Brooklyn Machine Works.
Yeah, they were cool.
In fact, Google Superco Silencer. It was the guy from Brooklyn who then did something else. It's a very cool bike.
Nice. We'll find a link to that.
So that interests me. In terms of electronics, I'll admit to being a little bit of a Luddite, but I also, by the same token, I keep an eye on it. I ran in the spirit of being open to things, I ran XTDI2 for a while when it came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But rapidly came to the conclusion that unless you've got a front mech, it's pretty much no point on a mountain bike. because of the complication and the extra weight and all of that kind of stuff. And there are a couple of issues with the haptic feedback that you get from the shifter that I didn't like either, but that's the personal thing. But realistically, for one by drivetrains, it was just nice shifting, and mechanical does that pretty well.
Yeah, true.
But I've used it on a, I have used it on a two by setup, and as soon as you've got a front mech in there, it just transforms front shifting. So I can understand why it's big on road bikes, because it must be amazing to just have that auto trim function and all the other functionality. So, so I get it. It's just not, but it, what I couldn't make the value proposition.
Fair enough.
We have had the SRAM AXS through the workshop. One of the limited edition Sodamax tie hardtails went out with a with XX1 AXS on it.
That's a nice build.
It's a very nice build, yeah. So that was, that's very cool as well, again. But it's still not a game changer. It's still just really nice shifting. I mean, the bike looked super clean without any cables on it.
Yeah.
Well, not no cables on it, but with like one less cable on it. And the setup is just ludicrously easy. It's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. So it's a very cool thing. Again, I'm a little bit of the, I'm a little bit solution in search of a problem in terms of my attitude towards it. But it's very nice. It's a very cool thing.
It's a nice to have if you can afford it, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's not going to, it doesn't give you any extra performance or robustness.
No.
Or...
I mean, we, I mean, the guy paid, I think the guy paid over £1,000 more than he would have done for XX1.
Right.
Which isn't exactly cheap in the first place.
No. It's a big difference.
It's
isn't
a big
it?
Difference.
Yeah.
And that was the thing I came to with XTDI2 as well. It was like, it was going to be like a £600 or £700 upcharge just for an electric rear derailleur.
Yeah, it's insane. What about, have you had a chance to have a look at the Fox Live Valve stuff?
I've looked at it, but we don't work with Fox in any way, so I've not got access to the specs, or I haven't really done much more with it. It looks interesting up to a point, but it's, the rumours I was hearing, before it came out, was that it was potentially going to be an adaptive damper system, like the constantly adaptive damper systems they have on cars.
Right.
Or even potentially even, I don't know whether the there's a patent that exists, which I think the University of Sheffield hold, on magneto-rheo-heterological dampers, which is the stuff where you can change the viscosity of the fluid with electric pulse. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, which a lot of posh cars have.
Yeah.
But I think the bicycle application is not available to be used generally. I think there's a patent.
Interesting.
But I thought it was going to be something along those lines. But in actual fact, it's just a servo actuated conventional shock with some accelerometers.
Yeah.
So it doesn't move the game on any more than EI did with Lapierre 5 years ago.
Okay.
I'm sure it's lovely, but again, I've got a, again, it's something like a £2,000 upcharge to get the full system. And I've got a 50 quid OPT remote on my Cane Creek rear shock, which probably offers 80-90% of the functionality.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, yeah. I might be underselling it because I've never ridden it. So again, I'm not really speaking from a position of knowledge, but just look from the outside looking in, it's not, it's a clever electronic system actuating a conventional shock. It doesn't move shock technology.
Yeah, not game changer.
Any further forward, which is what I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. So given all of that, it, and you know, your comments that you feel like you found the right point for all the geometry side of things.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a reasonably good time for people to buy bikes? Do you think there's much big change coming in the near term? Because I think that's the problem a lot of people find. They're like, well, I kind of fancy a new bike, but is it going to be outdated within 12 months because everything takes another leap forward?
I think it is a good time to buy a bike, actually, because I think the geometry stuff is beginning to work itself out. I can understand why you might feel a little aggrieved with a view of where the market is now if you'd bought a bike maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, our geometry's taken a massive step, but even now, even though very few people have got to where we are, I think it'll happen. But you can see it happening in, incrementally as model years, it's a degree here, it's 20 mil on the reach there, and it's, yeah. And you can see it's all moving that way, which is brilliant, because I think it'd just be better bikes for everyone. But I think the geometry is beginning to settle down, and people are beginning to realize that this is how a off-road bike ought to be configured. Things like wheel sizes have certainly settled down. Frame interfaces have settled down. I've not seen anything to suggest that this new 157 standard's going to take over the world.
Is that super boost?
Yeah. So-called super boost. And even if your new bike does have super boost, you probably all it. I mean, on the race face cranks, you just flip the chainring round and it's done. So it's not like it's not actually as bigger upheaval as boost was in a lot of ways because of where drivetrain technology is now as well. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I think boost is probably fairly set. I've not seen any crazy new axle standards or wheel sizes or anything like that. Tire sizes are definitely getting bigger, but again, they're beginning to settle down at the 2.5, 2.6 kind of area, and mm-hmm. companies are providing enough space for those tires. Tubeless technology is pretty reliable now. One by drivetrain technology is pretty reliable now. So there's a lot of good stuff out there, and it's not. You're not massively going to be left behind. Certainly nothing that I'm seeing, or even anything, full disclosure, nothing I'm working on is going to be another big bang kind of step. Now, obviously, I'm only a small company, so there might be some propeller head at, Trek or Specialized about to, shake everything up. I don't know. But my feeling is, from what I understand at the moment, is actually it's more settled than it's been for quite a while.
Okay, that's good to hear. E-bikes then, let's talk briefly about that. Is that something you've been looking at? Because there's obviously huge amounts of talk about e-bikes at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And we do look at it. Yeah, definitely. It's my main... I'm a big fan of e-bikes. I'm not a hater at all. I think to see what they've done for friends of mine, certainly more specifically parents of friends of mine. I know guys in their 60s now who had to stop riding, who used to ride when I first started riding as a teenager, who had to stop riding with the club because they just can't keep up anymore. Yeah. And they're now back out riding, it's a facilitator.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which is awesome from the mountain bike side of things. If it gets more people into the sport, then great. I mean, obviously, there's all the environmental concerns about using yet more batteries and more rare earth materials, but that whole holistic argument of consuming less and doing less just seems to be lost in the noise of the charge for electrification of all modes of transport. So,
yeah, true.
That's a far bigger debate.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're looking at it. How to do it in a Cotic way that is brand appropriate is what I'm struggling with, but it's certainly something I look at and I like the idea of. I actually wish in some ways that, even though it's being pushed from the mountain bike side of things and the enthusiast side of things, I wish that it would be pushed more into the mainstream as a car replacement thing.
Yeah.
Because actually that, I think, is where, in terms of improving all human life, reducing carbon emissions, reducing traffic, improving air quality, improving fitness, improving all of this, actually that's the biggest win.
Yeah, it's hard to
argue. If you can persuade someone to get rid of their car and do the 3 mile commute to work on an e-bike, can you imagine what an impact that would have?
Yeah, it'd be pretty powerful, wouldn't it?
And that's where the big win in e-bikes is. But it takes political will, and don't even get me started on politics.
Yeah, let's not go there. Fair enough. So what else is going on at Cotic at the moment? You've got another demo guy joining you.
Yep. So we've expanded the demo tour because now we've got to the point where the fleet's so big because of the range of bikes that we've got that actually only about half of it ever goes on the van. We can't physically fit it all on the van. So there's bikes sitting there ready to be demoed. And there's also and also obviously Sam doesn't work every weekend. So there was an opportunity to get someone else on board to just make more use of that. So we've got Darren on board. And he's going to be working on so if you book a demo with Cotic, it'll either be with Sam or Darren now, because he's going to be out on the road when Sam's off and on his weekends off, and then when he's not doing that, we're going to start opening our base at Carver in the Peak District at the weekends. So you'll start be able to do demos there, book your factory collections, maybe showroom the bikes, because the demo bikes will be there. So
yeah,
they won't be immaculate gleaming showroom bikes, but they will be you'll be able to have a quick spin around the yard and get the sizing right. Awesome. And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so we're just beginning to settle the schedule down because he only joined us very recently, but we're definitely going to be opening a couple of times a month from very soon, so keep an eye on the website for that. So yeah, that's a big thing, just because we're massively increasing the number of bums on seats that we can get, so you can come and try the bikes out. Cool. Which is super important. And then the other thing from the other side is that once you're actually a Cotic owner, we've launched Cotic CC this year, Cotic Cycling Club, which is an owner's only. You don't have to pay to be a member or anything like that. You're automatically a member if you own a Cotic. But what we're doing is we're doing exclusive events. So we've done things like what we're trying to do is encourage people to get out of their comfort zone a little bit, maybe, or try something they maybe wouldn't ordinarily try. So Rich, our marketing brand guy, he's a massive fan of skate parks in the winter, you know, indoor ramp riding.
Yeah.
And so we booked out one of the places in Sheffield. We hired the whole place, closed it down for the night, and said only people, because you're in your 40s and you're going down and borrow a BMX and you just like crash your brains out in front of like some crazy 17-year-olds who do backflips. It's all a bit intimidating. So we just try and create like a safe, like encouraging place to come and try new things.
Okay.
So we did that. We hired out Revolution Bike Park for the day in the midweek and did a subsidized My First Uplift.
Nice.
We had an owner's ride at the spring party. We're going to do another owner's ride at Ardrock Enduro coming up very shortly.
Nice.
We've got a couple of other events. Just tonight, we're doing a meet at Bowl Hills BMX track because we supported some of the redevelopment with a bit of our trail advocacy fund.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a CC event down there tonight. Just little things like that we're just trying to do. We did try and organise a backpacking event, but we had to cancel it in the end. But it was right in the middle of June, and we just didn't get enough uptake. But to be honest, given how bad the weather was in June, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's a fair comment.
So we'll hopefully do that later in the year. Just do a ease into bikepacking kind of overnighter kind of ride. And yeah, we're always open to ideas. So if you've got some ideas, if you are an owner and you want to do something, yeah, it'd be great if we got together and did this, then just get in touch, because that's cool.
Yeah.
And then, although organised by us, not exclusively for Cotic owners, we've started the Women of Steel, which is a women's advocacy group. Anyway, it's a women's mountain bike group.
Yeah.
Hannah joined us a couple of years ago. She's our admin assistant and dispatch organizer extraordinaire.
Yeah.
And she didn't ride bikes when she first joined. Mm-hmm. And she's been on this journey of learning, getting into mountain biking. And we realized that even though it was implicit that in the nature of the company and that, you know, we don't discriminate against anyone, you know, we'd never pay a woman less than a man, or, you know, we're all, you know, we hope we're encouraging people into the sport. It was all kind of stuff we sort of knew that's how we felt, but we weren't explicit about it. You know, we weren't out there promoting it. And okay. Anyway, we did a women's day when Che was injured. I think it was last summer. He just said, look, I'm not racing. I'm injured. I'm going out of my mind, bored, because I can't ride my bike. And B, I just want to do something for Kotick because I'm not riding around with a jersey on. Uh-huh. How about, you know, I've helped a few of my mates and their wives, girlfriends get into it. Maybe we could just do a women's coaching day. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh yeah, that could be quite interesting. So we did, like, we put the word out on like the Thursday afternoon before the weekend that we were going to do it. It's real ad hoc. And we had to close it down. He had to get some help because there were that many people. Like, wow. 3 days notice, there were like 30 women there or something.
Amazing.
Like that. We were like, oh my God, this is, you know, it all got very out of hand very quickly.
Yeah.
But one thing Hannah said, having been on the day, was that all of these women were like, loved meeting all these other women. And they were like, oh, it'd be great to keep in touch, but there's no way to kind of do that. So yeah. Anyway, it's been rolling around in our heads to do something along those lines. So Women of Steel is a closed Facebook group that you apply to be part of. And it's where you can share your experiences, you can organize rides, you know, meet people. And it's just sort of trying to facilitate a female-led community, because they just interact with the sport in an entirely different way to men. And it works better for them if they, you know, if it's in that kind of a space. Mm-hmm. And a couple of our brand ambassadors, Kate Potter from AQR Holidays, who was a racer for us like 10, 15 years ago, she went all the way to the World Championships on one of our bikes. She's posting up advice and things like that because she's a coach. Kelly Jane, our brand ambassador, she's involved, and they've been organizing rides, and we're going to do some skills coaching with Gaz from A-Line, who's one of our other brand ambassadors. So we're just kind of using our brand ambassadors and sponsors to just try and create a bit of a community. And like I say, it's even though we're, you know, it's Kotick Women of Steel, it's, you don't have to be a Kotick owner. It's just all about trying to grow the sport on that side of things.
How do people find that if they want to join?
Just search Women of Steel on Facebook, Kotick okay. Women of Steel, or Women of Steel on Facebook.
Yeah.
And the community's there.
Yep.
And if you want to just ask a few questions or something like that, then email Hannah@kotick.co.uk and she'll point you in the right direction.
Good stuff.
We'll just trying to I don't know, do our bit.
Yeah, fair enough. So if people want to find out more about Kotick, where should they head?
Okay, so we are, if you just search Kotick Bikes on Facebook, you'll find us there. At Kotick Bikes on Instagram. We are www.kotick.co.uk, where all the contact details are. If you really want to keep up and hear about everything first, including product launches and things like that, sign up to our email newsletter, because unlike most people's, it's not your usual spamathon. we tell you where the demo's going. I'll email you some things about geeky technical stuff, yeah, or we'll tell you about brand new products before anyone else hears about it. It's much more of a personal communication tool for us rather than, you know, getting email every day offering some ridiculous offer, because that's just not how we work.
Fair enough.
If you want to sign up to that, that'd be great.
Is there a page on the website to
do that? Go to cottit.co.uk/contact and there's a sign up form on the thing. That's us.
All right. Good stuff. Well, it's super interesting. Thanks for facilitating the experiment and getting me on a 275 rear wheel.
No worries.
Super interesting to do that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. More surprising than I expected.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
the times were convincing.
Yeah.
To say the least. So thanks for that. Appreciate your time today. It's good to chat through it.
Yeah.
And look forward to seeing what comes from Cottic in the future.
Thanks very much.
All right. Cheers.
All right, that's it for our chat with Si Turner. I hope you've enjoyed listening. If you want to find out more, then head to cottic.co.uk to check out the range, including the brand new longer travel version of the Flair Max, the 132. Thanks to Precision Hydration and Komoot for supporting the podcast, and don't forget, they've both got great listener offers for you. Head to precisionhydration.com to learn more about your specific hydration needs and for your free hydration plan. To get 20% off all Precision Hydration products, just use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout. Also, head to komoot.com/G, that's Komoot spelled K-O-M-O-O-T, and use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, to get a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.